Welcome to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Jay Thomas. We got the whole gang here together. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jill. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, here we go. Wow, was that ever a lot of rain we saw yesterday?
Yep, at least in Saskatoon.
Well, and I know it doesn't
not all parts of the province.
And it's not quite everywhere, and it's not quite all to the north.
Yep.
But if you did look at weather radar, there was a pretty significant chunk of the province that got some decent precipitation. And then places like
some hail and
there was some of that. And then places like where we are, boy, did it rain. Wow. Yep. We haven't had a soaking like that in a long time.
Last Thursday, we had, there was a house at the north end of Blackstrap that lost its roof.
Oh my gosh.
Big plow wind came through and.
Really? Wow. That's crazy.
I saw it. We were sitting on our deck. We're about 10 kilometers away, right?
What, the roof just blew by, or
we
what?
We were just sitting on our deck with a bunch of people and talking, and so those clouds look kind of, like that. The storm's going to kind of miss us. We're right at the edge of it. And I said, but those clouds look kind of weird. Like, and sure enough, I hear later on another from the town of Hanley, she called me and she said that, Cindy said, are you guys okay over there? And says, yeah, why? And she sends us a picture of this house that's lost the whole roof.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's crazy. Yep. Wow. So yeah, a lot of rain. That's good news for most things, right?
Yep.
I do have to report on my watermelon plants from Paul, though.
Paul, yes.
So he gave me 3 watermelon plants, and the hail and the wind took out 2 of them this week. So I only have 1 left. So I'm a little disappointed because this was a competition.
Paul's probably winning right now.
I know.
He probably has it inside the greenhouse.
I'm really bummed right now. So, Paul, it's on. I only got 1 plant left, and I'm going to baby this guy.
How come the hail didn't get that one?
Well, I planted them in 3 different spots. So I planted 2 of them in my raised bed and 1 of them in a pot. The one in the pot, it got decimated by the wind. And then the one on the one side of the planter, I think just the way the wind came around, the other one was a little bit more protected.
So the leaves
are okay.
Is there fruit on any of those yet?
Oh, no, just a little bit of flowers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that comes later still.
Yeah.
Okay. 1-877-332-8255. Join the conversation by calling that number or texting it as well. What's going on in the greenhouse right now?
Right now in the greenhouse, we are stocked full of trees and shrubs. It's like that time of season where everybody's getting in their yard. They finished doing the prep work for their yard and they're sort of filling in some empty spaces. So
the flower pots are done, the garden's in. So now they're doing the shrubbery and trees and those kind of things.
Yeah, that. And then also it is like people are patching up their lawns right now. A lot of lawn care questions coming in right now.
Did my lawn green up this week?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With this rain, everything's just like lush. Looks beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then people picking up fertilizer for their trees. And we have to remember that it's time to stop fertilizing in just like 15 to 20 days. So we want to get some fertilizer into those trees to get them some nutrients right now so that in just a little bit of time, they can start shutting down. So people are doing that as well, coming and asking for lots of questions.
And June is bug time. Everybody's bringing in their little baggies of bugs. And things that are out right now is that the pear slug's out, which is like it's a larva stage of a sawfly, basically. It looks like we call it a pear slug. It looks like a slug, and what it does, especially on roses, you'll see blotches on the roses. You'll see 2 things in the roses right now. You'll see the blotches, which is the pear slug.
Okay.
And then if you look on the back side of the leaf, there'll be like a little, almost like a transparent slug-looking thing on the back. So, and then also you'll see little round circles eaten out of the leaves of roses, and those are the leaf cutter bees.
Oh, right? Okay.
And it's a hard thing, as how do you get rid of everything, right? So the best thing to do is you go with either something like an Endol or an insecticidal soap, or you can use Bug-X out or whatever, and go in the evening when the bees aren't out, and then you hit the bottom side of the leaves and you get rid of the pear slug. They get rid of it pretty easy. And because you don't want to spray during the day when the leaf cutter bees are out, because the leaf cutter bees are amazing pollinators.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want to be able to affect those. So if you have an issue with roses, go in the evening.
And the damage that the leaf cutter bees are doing is not going to be any permanent damage to the plant. It's just going to, it just affects the aesthetic a little
bit. And you know what? And same thing with the pear slug.
Mm-hmm.
If honestly, unless the pear slug gets really, really bad, then just leave them alone, and because then you don't affect the bees as well. And then just keep fertilizing and watering your rose tree, and it'll put on new growth and you'll be fine. Right. So.
Yeah. No. Okay.
The other thing that's happening in the garden center, it's wedding season and it's grad season right now.
Yes,
so everybody's getting ready for backyard weddings and outdoor weddings and then grad parties. And so we are having our first grad party for my daughter next Friday. So my mom's been getting the cabin all looking nice to have a barbecue out there. And we had our first grad celebration on Thursday. So that was really,
that's pretty
really
cool.
Exciting too. I can't believe my baby's graduating grade 12. It's crazy.
That's wild. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Weren't we just there?
Like, we were just there, right?
What's going
we're
on?
We're not old.
That's wild. Yeah. Okay. Well, 1-877-332-8255. Good update with what's happening. I can't believe, going back to what you said for a second, I can't believe that we're saying 15 to 20 days we got to stop fertilizing trees. It feels like, well, first off, Friday was the first day of summer, right? Yeah. Like, we're just into summer. And secondly, we haven't really gotten any nice weather yet. Yep. You know, like, there's only been really a handful of nice days.
Yep.
So when you say, like, well, we just about got to stop soon, what are you talking about? It feels like we're just finally getting here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a short season. That's why getting on it or that Mother's Day weekend and starting to fertilize is so important.
I hate to depress you, but what's the date today?
It is the 22nd.
So what is tomorrow? Is it today?
Yes.
Is it today or tomorrow?
I think it's today.
Summer solstice was yesterday.
Oh, yes, 21st. Okay.
Yeah.
So now the days get shorter. Sorry to depress you.
Yeah. Well, let's kick things off on a bang. Why don't we? Let's go to a text line really quick here before we go to our first break. This is Jean from Prince Albert. What can I do about the abundance of ants and ant holes in the lawn and my garden? So we'll start. There's sort of two texts here from Jean. So that's actually a pretty easy one.
Now, first of all, with the lawn, just keep your lawn thick. You know, like overseed it, everything else, fertilize it, get your lawn thick. The ants don't like nice, lush, thick lawn. They like
sparse
lawns and that kind of stuff. Dry lawns. That's what they like. Okay. They love it.
So if you're a person that wants to not fertilize and water your lawn because you don't like cutting your grass.
Yes.
You're probably going to
get, you get more dandelions, you get more insects, you get more all that kind of stuff.
And so you got a choice to make.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want bugs or do you want grass?
And then the other thing you got to do is you can use the nematodes, right?
Yes.
And nematodes, but you still have the water.
Now would be a perfect time to use it because we just got this rain.
It's perfect rain right now. Now it's a perfect time to add nematodes because you got to have it down, moist down to where the nest is, which is down, you know, 8 to 12 inches down, right? Mm-hmm. It's not right at the surface. And so those nematodes need to go through moist soil. So with this rain we've had, or if you had rain, because there's people listening that didn't get as much rain.
Right.
And, but yeah, you can definitely put the nematodes down now, and that'll basically decimate those ant colonies.
Okay. Second part of Gene's text is there's tiny bugs on a lot of my plants. My columbine flowers are covered, not looking too healthy. They don't bite.
Yeah, it's most likely she's got aphids.
Yeah.
And aphids we see in a variety of colors. You can have red aphids, so they look like little red bugs, black aphids, they look like little black ones, or you can get green aphids.
And they're like a lime green.
Yeah. And aphids, they adapt as they need to. So when they're first born, they don't have wings. And then the second batch, because they might eat off that plant, they need to go to another place where there's food, they develop wings. So they kind of adapt as they need to. So they're kind of a bugger. It is one.
A bugger?
A bugger.
Yeah, literally.
A bugger, yeah.
And they're born pregnant. So it's just a cycle that you have to stay on top of them, blasting them with cold water or having a pyrethrin spray like Endol is a good one for those.
Yeah, and long term, just making sure that you have little wren houses, bird houses around your yard and basically a bird bath or something like that, a water feature. If you can attract those little birds, they'll keep the equilibrium of, you know, there'll always be some bugs, but they will keep it under control.
Right.
And
okay.
If you can get some ladybugs into your yard by attracting some ladybugs, we actually have our first shipment of ladybugs arriving this week. We haven't been able to get them because of all the fires, but we are getting our first shipment of ladybugs. Mm. So if you don't have ladybugs in your yard, you can always pick some up at the garden centers. Yep. Now.
There we go.
Both have them in Regina and Saskatoon.
Let's take our first break. Doug is on the line in North Battleford. Doug, hang on tight. We're going to get to you as soon as we get back from this. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to Garden Talk. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. The whole gang is here. Thanks for spending Sunday morning with us. We've got some text to get to, lots of that to do, which is great. But first, to the phone lines into North Battleford and talk to Doug. Good morning, Doug. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. I hear you got a bald spot.
Yeah, both ends of my garden are doing very well, but the middle portion, I've planted beets and carrots five times, and they will not come up. Yet both ends are doing very well.
And the middle won't.
The middle won't do nothing.
Is it a big garden or a smaller garden?
No, it's only about 30 feet long and about 10 feet wide. It's not very big. And it's grown very good for the last 7-8 years. And all I did this spring, the same as I always did, is just fertilize it a little bit and worked it up. But
yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that middle portion.
Sometimes I'll see root crops, if there's been some fresh manure dumped into a certain area, they don't grow as well. But it doesn't sound like that's the case in this one.
Yep. What's your seed source? What kind of seeds you have?
Oh, I don't know. Just buying it from Walmart and a couple of greenhouses trying, you know, that's what I thought. Maybe it was poor seed, but you can't have poor seed every time.
No, not at all. Because I know carrots, I've had problems with carrots the last couple of years too, but this year I didn't have, all the carrots came up this year.
Right.
But I switched seed sources this year, so it's, that may have made a big difference or not. I'm not sure, but a lot of times it could be the way like Jill was saying, is that okay? Ground crops don't like a ton of, you know, manure or stuff like that.
So no, if you haven't put any of that on.
Okay.
There.
So, if you got to watch for that, and then it depends on the way your sprinklers, but I mean, if you're doing the same as you always done,
right.
the middle doesn't get more water than the outside edges. Do they? Sometimes when you put your sprinklers in and then you cross over, the middle gets all like four times the water than the outside edges do, right?
Well, that could be it too, because I'm just watering with a garden hose and a nozzle, right?
Yeah. So you're just watering by hand, or you got a sprinkler out there?
No, just watering it by hand.
Well, that shouldn't.
Well, there goes that theory.
There goes that theory. That shouldn't. Mm-hmm. You should be watering basically
you
the same.
You have us stumped a little bit here. Yep. This is a mystery.
Yeah, it usually has to do with nutrients. I mean, in a bigger garden or in my fields, I know I have, you know, my fields, I used to have trees that used to go big and then small and big. And there used to be, I found out there was when I did soil tests, I mean, I had basically a really sandy strip that went through the middle and it didn't hold the nutrients properly, right?
Right.
And so, but I mean, you're only talking about 10 by whatever. So it's
10 by 10.
And he's had success in the past.
And you've had success in the past.
We've had no problems at all.
Well, we'll throw this one out to the listeners.
Say that again?
It wouldn't have anything to do with cats, would it? I've had a real problem with cats doing their job in that area for years.
Well, yeah, if the cats keep doing their thing in the same area, then you will have an issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the pH of that soil is going to be
It'll be changed.
Off.
It'll be off.
Well, that's always where it's, you know, like sometimes there's two or three cats in there at one time doing their job, right?
The
neighbors won't control the cats, and I can't keep them out.
But you've never had a problem other years, though.
Oh, yeah, we've had a cat problem for years.
No, right? No, but in that one spot, this year's different than other years.
This year is the only year we've had a problem.
Yeah, so that's kind of thinks that, okay, well, if you had that many cats all the time, you would have that problem earlier.
Unless when he's seeding, the cats are digging in the center a little bit. But
Yeah.
Well, so what could a guy do to...
Do you have a hose? You have a hose that reaches out there, right? A garden hose that reaches out there, right? Yeah. What about one of those automatic watering?
Yeah, you might want to think about one of those scarecrows. It's a sprinkler that you hook onto your hose.
Right.
And you stick in your garden, and what happens, has a motion detector on it, and every time the cat comes into the garden, it gives them about a 5-second, and the cats don't like that at all.
Okay.
Keeps the deer out, keeps all that kind of stuff out as well.
Right.
Okay.
So is there anything I can do to the soil to...
Well, unless you try to figure out the soil, I would do a soil test first of all, okay, so you can pick one up at the garden centers, you know, a soil test kit. Or I think even Walmart or anybody are going to have them. And it's a rapid test, it's called. And you can test for both pH, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium. So you can test all three of them. It's little pills, you know. And then you need to get some distilled water when you're at Walmart as well, because you have to test with distilled water. You can't use tap water, okay?
Right.
So do a test and find out how those nutrients are doing, especially the pH. That's what I want to check with.
Okay.
And find out what's happening with that. And then once you know that, then...
call the garden center.
Call the garden center or give us an email at info@dutchgrowers.com. And then we can go from there.
Okay.
All right.
I've got to sneak and hunt, so that might be the problem. But
yep.
I don't know.
It's just strange that your outside's good and your inside's not. That's what's. But it's not a very big area.
But if those cats start going to the same place over and over again,
you might be just catching up. You know?
Finally coming to the point.
Very well could be. It's been perfect for 7-8 years, and now
you might be just catching up now. So
yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we will get one of those kits, and
try it out.
Next time we're in Saskatoon, I might come and see you, if that's okay.
Right on, perfect.
Perfect. Thanks, Doug, for the call.
Sounds great. Have a great day, guys.
Take care, you too. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-877-332-8255. Great call from Doug. That's kind of a different one, but you know, some detective work and kind of can figure it out. I think it's just a buildup. You know,
it comes down to detective work, really. I mean, it's there could be so many different things until you really dig into it.
And if
pardon the pun,
seeding it and the cats are digging around, then maybe the seeds just aren't taking as well too.
And like I said, it's depending on seed varieties, and so it depends a lot of things. So,
but you can pick up those scarecrow sprinklers, right? Like at the garden center, you guys have them, right?
But you can find them a lot of places.
Where do they price at roughly? Just what are they, like $50 to $100?
I think
they're
around like $30 to $60.
Yeah. Okay, in that price bracket. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. 1-877-332-8255. Lots of texts here, which is great. So let's go to our next one. This is from Darren, who's in Saskatoon. Well, we still have some time. Good morning, Garden Talk team. I've got a decorative sloped rock wall that I want to start some cover on. Can you suggest plants or plants that would do well spreading, growing between the rocks? So perennials was, you know, it was an idea, but what else could go in there?
Yeah, you could do a low-growing juniper if you wanted to.
Yep.
That would be really tough. You see a lot of them even growing in nature.
Well, it depends if you want to cover the wall right up, though.
Yeah, so right? if your area, it sounds like you just want to grow them in between the rocks.
In between the rocks.
So with that, if you have really dry soil, that one's a really good one because they can get established, and once they're established, they don't need a lot of water. Otherwise, you could use some different types of creeping sedums. They're like a succulent.
We have some beautiful thyme.
Yeah.
And that's in between our rocks, and they look gorgeous right now.
Yeah. And you also have the Creeping Jenny growing.
Creeping Jenny,
yeah. The Smachia is the Latin name for that one. And the Creeping Jenny is, you can either get it in green or you can get it in gold. And it does well in the sun or the shade. Yep. But that one does well in more a little bit more a moist environment. So you have to make sure that you keep it watered. If you do have it in a more shady location, there is some mosses that you can get and some clovers that you can get as well, too, that would look good in there.
Okay.
There's lots of them that'll work in those
areas.
Yeah,
when you go into the garden center, we actually have a shady ground cover section and then a sunny ground cover section. So it kind of, you can go to those areas and find some great ground covers. But the ones that I mentioned are probably the most vigorous ones.
Yep. Right. Wanda is in Saskatoon. I just found and removed some lily beetles from my plant.
Yep.
How do I deal with this now and for next season?
That's a good question, because my staff was saying that we're still getting lots and lots of calls and people coming in asking about lily beetles.
What did you used to be able to do to battle these?
We didn't used to have them. You know, they've only been here for maybe
5 years,
five, six, 7 years, right? So, and now they're getting bad. So you got to go out there and scout, like Jill was saying, and then you see the orange eggs in a row, and you basically take a lint roller, or you can take a little bowl and then your fingernail and just knock them off into the bowl and then destroy them. And also you can spread some diatomaceous earth on the soil. And as the adult comes out of the soil, then it gets them that way as well. So there's lots of different ways you can do it.
And if they aren't blooming in full bloom yet, or if you want to take some newspaper and make little cones around the blooms, and you can spray them with Bug X Out or Pyrethrin end-all spray, and that will help as well, too.
So that's actually hitting them.
Yeah,
that'll
but
get them.
You have to actually hit the bug in order to do that. Yep. It doesn't work if you spray it on the plant, then the bug kind of walks around on it later.
That's why the diatomaceous on the ground works pretty good, because the bugs have to walk through it.
But scout.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's take our break. News update for everybody, and a Rick in Regina will be on with us when we get back. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. You're listening to Garden Talk, and welcome back. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. We've got lots of text to get to, so we'll get to that in a second here. So good text to talk about. But we've got to thank Rick, another Rick, for waiting patiently on the line, who is in Regina right now. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Awesome. What is happening with your irises, or what's your question for us?
Well, these are dwarf irises. They're like a wildflower, I think, in Saskatchewan. We lived in a house that had a nice display of them, just beautiful. It was part sun, part shade. We moved to a new house. I put them into full sun. I thought that'd be good. They didn't do well at all. So now I've moved them into a place that's quite shady, a few hours a day of sunshine. They're thriving for the greenery, but they're not blooming. There's no blooms, really, just a couple.
There's a few things. Now, the wild irises, they are an iris that actually grows more in a boggy area in the ditches. And so, whereas your German irises, they like more sandy, well-draining soil, whereas these other ones, they like soil that's a little bit more moist. So sometimes even just moving them from an environment from one area in nature where their roots are getting lots of moisture to another area, like you said, you put them in a full sun area, that will make them struggle.
But now he's back almost full shade, only a few hours, so maybe it's not in lush green, but no flowers, correct?
Yes, lots of green.
Yeah, so maybe just not quite enough. You need that equilibrium. You need a little bit more sunlight, I think.
Also, irises don't like a lot of nitrogen, so that if you're fertilizing them, make sure you don't use a high nitrogen fertilizer, and then otherwise you'll just get leaves and you're not going to get any blooms on your flowers if you use a high nitrogen fertilizer.
Now, can I divide them, like with regular irises, you know, you pick them up and cut off the rhizomes and replant them. Do the wild ones work that same way, or are they different?
Yeah, you can definitely do that. About every 3 to 4 years, you usually suggest to split them and divide them.
Okay.
So let them get established, and then I'll usually divide them. Don't take more than about a third off the plant at a time, though.
Okay. So go easy on the nitrogen fertilizer and give them a bit more sunlight.
A little more sunlight, yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
Okay. Goodbye.
1-877-332-8255. Okay, we're going to keep going here with the calls to one of our regulars in Lestock. Hi, Ron. How you doing?
Hi. Good. Actually, I wanted to tell you a good news story that last week I talked about how 3/4 of my tomatoes got froze on June 10th.
Yep.
People north of town were listening, had extra 8 super fantastic tomato plants, and gifted them to me.
Oh, there you go. I love that.
Perfect.
The community is helping everybody out.
Susan and Milton, thanks again.
Yeah, awesome.
They're in the garden. They're blooming everything. They're really doing good.
Good.
So between that and helping the neighbor lady with her putting her tomatoes in, put the extras in, so I'm pretty much back to where it was before.
Well, you know what?
Great story. Glad to hear.
Great story.
We mostly get bad news stories because we're here to help people out, and so it's always, what's the problem? What's the issue? And we never really get good news stories.
Yeah, awesome.
So that's,
perfect.
That's great.
All right. Have a good day.
Thanks, Ron. Take care.
Goodbye.
1-877-332-8255. That's fantastic. Yeah.
It's no different than, you know, people planting a little extra things in the garden and then donating to a family that might be in more need or a food bank, local food bank. And there's food banks all over. Even small towns have food banks, right? So that's always a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Lori's in the text line and says, I have calla lilies. The leaves are curling. I don't see any bugs. Any suggestions?
Leaves can be curling on a calla lily for inconsistent watering.
Mm-hmm.
Also, usually that means there's something going on in the root system. So you want to just be digging around the soil, check for moisture levels, sort of see what's going on there. That's usually what I would see. Without a picture, it's hard to see if it's a disease or a fungal or anything like that. So if you want to take a picture and send it to info@dutchgrowers.com, we can probably help you out a little bit further than that. But from what I see or from what I hear, it's probably just inconsistent watering. Yeah. They like to be evenly moist, and they also like to be in a part sun location.
And callas, not cannas, but callas like it a little bit more moist as well.
Once they get rooted.
They like a little bit more moisture. So, we've even put them on the edge of water gardens and that kind of stuff. So, yep.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Sue's out at Eagle Lake says, good morning. Do we now pinch off where the flowers on the lilacs grew this year to encourage more flower growth for next year?
Absolutely. You want to do that right away because all the lilacs are finished blooming now.
Okay.
Pretty much. And so you want to give them a pruning and then fertilize them, get the growth happening. You know, because every time you pinch one place, you get two stems coming up where you pinched, right? And so on those new growth, the next year after you fertilize, then that's where your blooms will be next year.
Okay.
So you have way more blooms. So you want to, and especially if you have a bloomerang, it's a lilac that that blooms almost three times a year. You want to deadhead it after every time it blooms. So that, I was going to do that actually yesterday, but it rained. It soaked yesterday.
Yeah.
In fact, I was walking to my dog last night, and I was, the dog was having fun, so I sort of ran with her a bit, and I had my sandals on, and I went whoop. My feet came out from underneath me.
Oh boy.
And I was soaked. So down I was go. Muddy and soaked.
Oh boy.
And so, but it was just too wet. I couldn't do it. But otherwise, yeah, you know, they need to be pruned right now. So do it as soon as possible. Fertilize a couple times yet before this summer. Get the growth happening. Lots of blooms next year.
So just to clarify something, I know we say pinching off, and that literally is, you know, when you talk about like petunias and stuff like that, you pinch them with your fingers. And
don't just take the flowers. Actually do a shaping of the whole plant.
But you're talking about pruning, right?
Pruning, so
because it's probably pretty hard to pinch branches with two fingers off of a...
Well, you can take your little snips and that and just what I call deadheading.
Right.
I mean, you can do that too, but what I want them to do is actually take some branches with it, and so that those branches get thicker and fuller and have more blooms next year.
So for Sue, it's not just the flower heads, is give it a prune.
I don't want to cut the plant down. I'm just doing a little shaping at the top.
Okay.
But good point, Jay. I get that question about deadheading all the time. Some people, even with their petunias, they'll just take the petals out and they'll leave like sort of the shell, which the seed's behind, and that defeats the purpose of deadheading. You need to take that little green piece at the base of the flower off as well, too, because those annuals, they'll be like, oh no, I've got to start reproducing seed again, and then they'll flower again.
But pinching off is just a sort of a layman's terms for like pruning those things off.
Deadheading.
But you can, whether it's flowers or it's a shrub or whatever, you even on small flowers, you can use tiny little pruning, pruning shears, right?
Yep. Depending on how large your project is.
Right. You don't have to just use just your fingertips, right?
No, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah.
Okay. 1-877-332-8255. We'll keep moving here with the text line. Lois in Saskatoon. Good morning. What varieties of yellow and pink potentilla are suitable for Saskatoon? Can these shrubs be pruned back every spring to keep them compact?
Yeah, it can. Yeah, absolutely. Yellow ones, there's Dakota Sunspot is another fairly newer one. It's just profusely blooming. Gold Star is another one. If you want a low one, it's Yellow Gem. If you want pink ones, there's Pink Beauty. There's Belle de Sor, I think it's called. And there's Happy Face, another one. A lot of them are new varieties. A lot of new varieties of all potentillas.
The potentillas are making a comeback now.
Really?
They're starting to breed different hybrids. Oh, they're hardy, but they're coming in with more colors,
Marmalade is my favorite.
Mm-hmm. It's really pretty.
Yellow, starts with yellow and turns a really apricot color.
Almost like a sunset.
Tons of blooms.
I feel like potentillas were a very sort of 70s plant was done up around...
Well, there was just yellow and white. That's all there was,
were a farmyard plant.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just a hedge in the city, you know?
But just like the hydrangeas, all the different kinds and the different types of nine barks and spireas, now the potentillas, they're starting to work on the breeding of them.
Yes.
And the flowers are being a lot better, so it's making a comeback, potentillas.
That's the thing, though, is like for so many years, you know, it was very, very standardized what we could grow here. You had one or two types of potentillas. You had, if you wanted a hedge, you had a cotoneaster hedge, you know?
And you had a fruticosa potentilla, which is a standard potentilla. The blooms were kind of single. And you know, not as nice, and
sort of pathetic looking.
But now there's way nicer ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they're just improving everything with crossbreeding and so many neat things, right? And if you wanted a cedar, it ended up being 10 feet wide and 20 feet tall in front of your house, blocking the front windows, you know, or growing through the eaves because it was, you know.
Yeah.
So there's just so many more varieties of everything now that are built to fit your space and look better, you know. Be thicker, fuller, all that stuff, right?
Every year we try to bring in new varieties all the time, and then we start getting rid of the old varieties, and so
Well, and you guys, I know, I'm sure have, like I've seen this before. We've tried new varieties and discovered that some of them are really good here, and some of them aren't quite as good. Right?
I do my research. Like I offer a warranty, right? So we guarantee no questions asked. We warranty all the plants. So I do my research in people's yards because in the research in the fields is not the same as in people's yards.
Mm-hmm.
So I can bring in a zone 4 plant, you know, and in the fields I'll have total loss all the time.
Yeah,
put it in people's yards where they have microclimates, and they'll be fine. Right. So and then so that's how I find out.
Or the reverse is you try something. Like, I know there's been a couple of varieties that I've tried that you don't carry anymore.
Yep.
Because they really just didn't do it well here.
Nope.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So we're not going to bring those in anymore because they were new, but they don't really do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's a good point to talk about right now. Is now is the time to be planting if you're wanting to get any evergreens or cedars in your yard. Now is the time to plant them because you want to get them established.
Established. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Don't wait until August.
Let's take a quick break. We got lots more text to come. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Zooming through our first hour here at Garden Talk. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. Welcome back. Lots of text. Keep rolling in. That's good. We'll keep going with that in a second. But right now to Regina to get to the phone lines and talk to Dave. Good morning, Dave. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing excellent. How are you guys?
Pretty good. What's the story with the tomatoes?
I would like to know, we have a short growing season, obviously, but I would like to know how much can you actually force your tomato plants to grow with fertilizer? Can you fertilize?
You will definitely see if you don't fertilize, you're gonna have a stunted plant and you're not going to have as much fruit on it as if you do. But I don't know if you're fertilizing more, if you're going to increase your yield.
No, if you throw too much nitrogen, then you're not going to gain anything. You're actually do worse things for it, right?
It's finding that balance. It's fertilizing them the right amount to get them to produce for you. The other thing, too, is once you get them, the fruit has already been set, you actually want to hold back on your fertilizer a little bit at that point in time, because if you keep fertilizing them, they'll develop too quickly, and then you'll go the other way as well too. So it's more,
well,
honestly,
like that?
It's more watering, consistent watering.
Yep, and then organic fertilizer, even like the alfalfa pellet tea and that kind of stuff, which I find works, is not a ton of nitrogen, you know, but it's enough to keep them going. But it's all those micronutrients that are in it that really make the plant healthy and make it produce like crazy.
And then if you're wanting to speed it up in a climate like we have, honestly, heat is the biggest thing. So putting a mini greenhouse over top of your plant, or a cozy coat, which is, we used to see them lots when I was a kid in the 90s. So you, basically it's like a plastic coat around them that you fill these little columns up with water, and the sun heats them up and warms the plant
up. Keeping them warm and keeping them out of the wind is the biggest thing right now. Yeah.
Okay. Another quick question, if you don't mind. A plum tree, is it come from a cutting, or are plum trees just a regular tree?
It's grafted. So what it does, you have a Prunus nigra, which is a wild plum tree. They grow it on that first, and then, well, in most cases, that's what they grow it on. And then they graft a tame plum tree onto the bud from a tame tree onto the wild plum and have a graft. And because the tame plum trees aren't hardy on their own root, they won't produce. They need to be on that wild plum to survive in Saskatchewan. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And so they're all grafted.
So if you have stuff growing out of the base, it's not going to be the same plum as the graft.
And you're not going to grow one from seed. Okay, it's not going to work here. You know. Okay.
So if it is coming, another plum tree's coming from the bottom, would that have the capability of cross pollinating?
Yes, it'll have some flowers on it. Actually, Prunus nigra, if you have a Prunus wild plum tree in the yard, it will actually pollinate the tame ones, the hybrid plums, like Pembina, Brooks Red, all those ones, way better than another regular plum tree.
Okay, well, that's perfect.
But you won't get any fruit off it, but you'll get the flowers. Okay?
Yeah, that's why I'm more worried about pollination than the fruit. So.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Take care, Dave. All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
And the hard part is finding one of those, because the nurseries don't give them up that easy, because, you know, they're going to grow the wild ones from seed, and then they use those to grow tame, to bud onto. So it's hard to find a wild plum tree that I love to keep a wild plum tree just as a shrub, just a bloom, period.
Okay, so let's actually go over this for a second, because this brings up a question for me. So if you grow a nursery grows a wild plum tree to get that rootstock to then graft on the tame one, okay?
Correct.
But when I buy a plum tree at your garden center, all you see is the roots and that graft.
Yeah.
And the tame top. So how do they keep the roots alive? Like, what do they do?
So,
do they grow?
So they grow that wild plum.
Okay.
Right? They grow it to about 3-4 feet tall.
Okay.
Right? Sometimes in BC, it'll be 4 or 5 feet tall, but just a little stick, right? Then they bud on the base where you see the graft union, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the bud union. And then what happens then is they let that grow. And once it grows, then later on that summer or the next spring, they'll cut the old wild plum off.
So they basically give it a whole season the wild stem with the grafted stem side by side, both living
Once it matures enough, they'll cut the wild one off, that 3 or 4 foot, 5 foot, wild plum off. Now that's why you see that little hook at the bottom with the graft. That's where you can see they cut the wild one off, and now the tame one takes over.
And then that tame one makes enough sugar.
And if anything comes from below the graft, whether it be an apple, pear, plum, or anything, you keep that trimmed off because they will take over the whole tree and basically just outcompete the tame one.
It's amazing that you can that root system. Yep. And then take all of its nutrients and sugar and everything produced from photosynthesis in the tree.
Yep. And give it
to the new root system. Yep. That's amazing.
Well, not new root system, top.
New top. But it's, it's not natural, and that's amazing. It works.
Works perfect.
Yeah, that's crazy. Okay. Anyways, 1-877.
It's the only way in the prairies we could have a lot of fruit trees here that survive our winters.
Right.
Basically.
Right. Otherwise, we're stuck with Saskatoon berries and.
Yep, exactly.
That's kind of what else?
Or little crabs.
Yeah.
You won't get the big apples.
What can you do with those?
Because there's lots of wild crabs around, right? So.
I guess you can. Can you make like crab apple juice and stuff out of those ones?
It's just applesauce or juices or jams.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
It's right.
Like a flowering crab, Like you see these tiny little apples. Yep.
My grandma used to make fruit leather out of her crab apples. So she used to put them in the blender and put them in the dehydrator and make little fruit roll-ups for us kids.
Yeah, that's cool.
Little.
Okay, well, that pretty much wraps up our first hour. We got to go through our break. News update coming up for everybody. We got texts from Randy, Brad, Rose, Bob, Barry, another Rick, Mike, Daryl. No, two Daryls, actually. So lots to come. Stick around. We'll answer your texts as soon as we can. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You've been listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Thanks for joining us, and welcome to hour number two of Garden Talk. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick, and we've got texts to get through, which is great, but we've got calls as well. So first, we're going to kick off by going to Regina and talking to Mary Jane. Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What's going on with your spruce trees? Tell us the story.
Okay. So last fall, we moved a bunch of spruce trees, and the ones that we moved later did a lot better, and most of them are green. But the ones we moved earlier have some brown on them, and like some of them are almost completely brown, but they have like a little bit of green at the bottom.
What do you mean by earlier?
Well, like some we moved in like early September, and then some we moved in October.
Okay.
Yeah. So the ones we moved in September are the ones that are looking a little worse for wear. And they have, like, so I tried to pull one of them out, but they're, like, well-rooted in still. But I'm just wondering if we keep watering them, if eventually they will come back.
Well, they should have by now. They should have put some new buds out, right?
So some of them do have, like, a couple new buds, like...
Like all through the tree or just at the bottom branches?
Well, one had one bud just at the top.
Okay.
And then none anywhere else, but then others have like a few new buds just at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to take a long time for those to recover, right? Some of them can recover, especially like if you have one bud at the top, that means the trunk is viable. Okay.
Okay.
And, but the reason for, you said September and October, it's funny that, that the ones of September, are doing worse. I mean, it's unless because most time because by September usually they've set the terminal buds and they've gone dormant, right? And usually we can start moving spruces in August. What did you move them with?
We just have like our own small. Oh, actually no, we just pulled them out with a backhoe.
Oh, you pulled them with a backhoe. So
yeah, them out with a backhoe. I guess I should say.
Yeah. How big were they?
The tallest ones were probably like five feet tall.
Okay, they weren't too tall yet then. Okay. Yeah. Sometimes pulling them with a backhoe, unless you get a, you know, especially if they haven't quite shut down, like the ones in October will be totally shut down.
I was
right?
going to say, we did have a really warm September last year.
Sometimes you have a really warm September. And if they haven't shut down and then they, once you cut the roots, you still go, we still sometimes in September will get a, you know, a pretty warm spot, right?
Yeah.
You know, it'll be some of our best temperatures of the summer sometimes in September. And mm-hmm. so then if it gets really hot still, then they're going to desiccate and they can't get the moisture up with the roots. By the time you get to October, then the heat's gone and then now the plant's totally dormant, right? So yeah. that might, and especially if you would have moved them with a tree spade, you wouldn't have had so much, you know, roots going bare root and everything else, right? And with you moving the backhoe, you get a lot of exposed roots and everything else. And so that would be the reason why you had that issue, this because of the kind of equipment you used to move them.
Okay.
And so, but if they totally brown, it's really going to be tough to get them to fill out. They will fill out eventually, but it might be something that, you know, if it's in a prominent spot, you might want to think about this next fall again, moving them again to another spot and moving another tree into that spot, you know, because you want to fill it in quicker.
Okay, so it's a shelter belt row.
Yep.
So eventually, like, it won't be very visible. But
okay, yep.
Do you, like, when you say eventually, do you mean, like, in a year or in, like,
in
5 years?
In, like, 5.
Okay.
Okay, at least 5.
Okay.
And that's with watering and fertilizing and everything else.
Yeah.
So okay. You might, like, so replacement might be a consideration.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, like I said, I had some in my yard, my acreage, it didn't look so good. It was in the spot where I wanted to fill in quicker. I moved that tree to another spot where I didn't really care. It could just grow. And then I put another good one in that spot where I wanted to fill in quicker. And then the other ones, they came back. They're coming back again. But they're just in a spot that, well, I'll just let it do what it's doing. And it's getting water. It's getting fertilized. And it'll come back eventually.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Perfect. Well, that makes lots of sense. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Mary Jane. Take care.
Yep.
Okay. Bye-bye. 1-877-332-8255. Over to the text line right now. This is Randy, who's in Warman. Good morning. When I fertilize my lawn, what setting should I use in my spreader when I fertilize? I'm apprehensive to go to a higher setting because I don't want to burn my lawn.
Yeah.
So usually...
Depends what kind of fertilizer you use, okay? Yeah. So, I mean, if you're using like a 30 plus nitrogen fertilizer, you have to be very careful, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I like the groundskeeper fertilizer because it's a 16. But the reason why it does so well around here is because, especially in the central part of Saskatchewan, is because of the sulfur in it and the iron in it, right? And so, but a lot of the slow release fertilizer you get, like see the Scott's fertilizers, everything else, unless you actually stop and dump a whole bunch in one spot, you're not going to burn it that easy.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're just not. And most of the fertilizer bags have a little spot in the back that say what setting to set it at.
The trouble is, though, with that, and I've run into this myself, is that I have a Scott's spreader, like a drop fertilizer spreader.
Yep.
And so if you buy Scott's fertilizer, it tells you exactly what number to use on your, right? But the bag of, say, Groundkeeper,
doesn't
tell you what number that is.
Yep.
It gives you a rate.
Yep.
How the heck do you figure that out? So all I did with mine was left it exactly where it was from when I used to buy Scott's fertilizer.
Exactly.
I think it's 7.5 is the number.
Yep.
And I just kept going with that with the Groundkeeper.
And one thing you remember to do if you want really good coverage on your spreaders is that don't set it at a higher setting. Set it at a bit lower setting and go one way with your fertilizer and then grid the pattern the opposite direction.
Right.
Okay. Then you don't get any, I got streaks in my lawn.
Strips,
you know? Strips. And if you do the grid pattern by doing half and half, you'll have a more consistent, nicer, greener looking lawn.
So let's say your fertilizer spreader has numbers 1 to 20, just as an example on it.
A lot of them are, you set it 4. Let's see. Okay.
So is that where you would set it? Like, would you set it
depends
out, like,
on which
4 out of 20?
On the old Scott's fertilizer, a lot of times it was set to 4. And then that's what you'd go at.
But let's say we have like, let's use this example. We've got 10 numbers. Yes. Would you, on average, set it about half? A quarter? Yep. Where would you put it?
Yeah, it below half.
Below half.
Yes.
So about a third.
Yep.
So
actually, what I like doing is just take it to your driveway. Just do a little quick spread in your driveway.
Yeah.
As long as you get a nice consistent covering of the ground. It doesn't have to be white. Yep. Right? Nice, consistent covering, and then go two directions. You'll have a great lawn.
So basically, if you've got 10 numbers, 10 settings,
yep,
go to 4 or 5. If you've got 14 settings, go to 6 or 7.
Yep.
If you've got 20 settings, go to 8 or 9. Something like that.
And you can see, before you put any fertilizer in there, open it up, and you can see how big the hole is.
Mm-hmm,
you know how big the prills are in the fertilizer, right? So you know how much you want to drop down, and it's really a logic thing.
Yeah, so, it's having a look at it afterwards and being like, okay, how much was this broadcast after I did that first strip? Kate, do I need to adjust it a little bit?
I had one spot in my grass when I fertilized. I have a pull behind spreader because I have quite a bit of area and I'm fertilizing.
Yep.
And I had one spot where I stopped. I could tell where I stopped, you know, and then I took off again and a whole bunch of fertilizer, you know, and there's a half moon streak of this. It never burnt it, but it is like emerald, like it's a dark green. I can see it looks like I actually did something on purpose right there. It just sticks out from the whole yard.
Interesting. Okay. So we got a good text, and this is actually perfect timing because we were just going to talking about this. Brad is in Regina. Brad says, really enjoy your show. I'm baffled by the light colored patches which are emerging in my lawn several days ago.
Yep.
I don't recall seeing these patches back on Thursday.
Yep.
The grass in these patches appears to be thinned out and shorter. I had fertilizer applied June 4th. After the fertilizer appeared to be quite a bit of foxtail, then had the grass cut on the 9th and weed man application June 13th. The grass has looked green since the weed spraying application. Just wondering what might be causing this sudden patchiness. And so Brad sent us a picture as well of a text. We can kind of see that. And it's interesting because there are some patterns in it a little bit too. There's kind of a streak down there. And
that looks like the way the fertilizer spreader was working.
Yes.
That basically looks like what happened there. It's kind of weird though because it's weird patterns, right?
Yeah, the sort of triangles.
I was going to say that, you know, maybe they had, you know, like a sod webworm or something, but sod webworms don't work in perfect triangles like that.
Yeah.
So that has to do with something with some application of some product that wasn't working right.
Yeah. If you did have weed men in, I would probably contact them because they would be able to identify that pretty quickly.
Yeah. So. Get a hold of weed man because
there's something going on the way it was applied.
There's definitely lines in that.
And they're
very uniform.
They're very uniform lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's not done by a disease lines like that or an insect. That's by something was applied differently.
Yeah. Because when it happens in nature, patches in nature don't usually have a uniform shape at all.
So they'll go more round, jagged circles.
Yeah, or just a clumpy area.
Or red thread will be long, linear lines, you know.
Or in my backyard, I have a window that the sun reflects off, and I get a perfectly rectangle spot in my lawn.
I had that at the other acreage. I had that the same thing. The sun shone up the windows, and I could not keep that lawn brown right there. I mean, green right there.
It's always brown.
It was always brown.
Right, exactly. So for Brad, who's listening, we suggest you get a hold of them. Maybe they can help you, you know, with that as well, because that seems like it's due to the application of something.
Something that's kind of weird there. Yep.
Yeah, maybe the machine
it's
wasn't
funny,
working right.
Weird directions of the lines too, though. That's just so weird.
Sort of like there's a diagonal right across the whole lawn.
Of the whole angled way of the lawn. So
at first I was like, oh, there's a tree shading the lawn. It was like perfect.
No, there's something
going on there.
Yeah, unless she has bad reflection up the different types of windows they have in the house. So. But it's kind of weird.
But because you're using like somebody who's supplying this stuff and doing these different applications, I'd get a hold of them. That would be our best advice.
And most of them will fix the issue too.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break. We're going to come back with more texts after this. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Well, welcome back. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk. We got lots of texts to get through and lots of calls, which is good. Let's start with a call in Saskatoon and let's talk to Paul this morning. Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. How's everybody?
Very good. Not too bad.
I'm not calling in to gloat.
Oh, jeez. I'm just hanging my head low.
Well, I'm not doing so good either here, but, you know, they didn't get beat up by hail or wind or anything like that.
That's all right, then.
Well, just need some heat, then, and then they'll get going, so.
I got a little consolation for you, if you're interested.
Consolation, good one.
I'm only growing 60 pepper plants this year.
Only.
And I don't know, are you growing peppers?
I have 2 pepper plants in my garden this year.
Okay,
only 2.
Well, I've got two sweet Hungarians.
Yeah.
Two hot Hungarians, a jalapeno, and a red bull's horn, if you're interested.
Oh, geez. You know what? The jalapenos have been hard to find this year. I don't have any jalapenos this year in my garden. Well, if you have an extra, I'd take one.
All my peppers have, there's peppers on them already.
Wow.
So.
Good for you. Yeah, I've got four peppers on one of my pepper plants right now. They're starting to form. So.
Well, they're in 6-inch pots. So.
Okay. You haven't put them in the ground yet, though, hey?
Pardon me?
You haven't got them in the ground yet, or are they growing in a greenhouse?
Well, they're in the greenhouse.
Okay.
So, no, they're in the 6-inch pots. I'm delivering them to someone else. You know, in the past, I've given them to people, they don't take care of them. So
yeah.
I would sooner give them to somebody who's going to give them the TLC and grow them, you know?
Well, you know what? My garden is actually pretty full right now. I don't have much space. I could probably squish one more pepper plant in, but that's about it. So.
Are we starting like an on-air garden
right?
garden trading show here?
This is going to be a garden trade. Who needs some pepper plants?
Yeah.
Who's going to give them some TLC?
We're sharing, you know?
Yeah, sharing is caring.
And if you know somebody, you can give them to them, too. Maybe even Rick will take some or Jay.
Yeah, that's true. We could. I actually have a few customers and a gentleman here from the radio show who always used to come in for some pepper plants. So maybe I could share with them,
Oh,
too.
Yeah, for Shaq.
Yeah.
He loves the hot peppers.
There you go.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
Can I get to my question?
Yes, sure.
Oh, yes,
let's
absolutely.
Do it.
Sorry.
I have these saplings coming out of these bushes and stuff I've got. Roundup, right?
Nope.
Paint Roundup on
nope.
them?
Nope. Because you'll kill the main tree.
Oh.
You don't want to do that. Just use what's called either Top Gun or Round. There's another product called Advance.
Okay.
It's made by Roundup, the company Roundup, but it's not glyphosate or whatever we call it.
It's
orange bottle.
Bottle.
And it is a horticultural, it basically is a horticultural soap, which burns that leaf down so it doesn't stool. Okay. But it doesn't stop it forever. It'll come back again. So every time you see a new leaf come out of the ground, you just hit it again and it'll keep burning it off. And then, but the nice thing about it, every time you cut it off, it turns into two. You cut it off, it turns into four.
Well, with using the
Top Gun or the Advance, you don't get that stooling. So you just keep it, you keep your amount of suckers down by a long shot.
Okay. Jill, do you have that at the store?
We do.
Fantastic. See you tomorrow morning.
All right.
Awesome.
Sounds good. See you, Paul.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah,
okay. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Bye-bye. 1-877-332-8255. All right. Pretty fun.
And one thing about Roundup that people have to remember is that there's been lots of studies, new studies coming out and everything else. If you are ever going to use Roundup, I'm talking about any chemical. I don't care what it is. Make sure that you got your gloves on and all that kind of stuff. If you're using a, you know, Malathion or anything like that, make sure you have a respirator. Just be careful when you're using things. Just like even when you, if you're going to use Drano in the house, you know, wear gloves and all that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. just be careful when you're using any type of products that you're using the proper protection.
Okay. 1-877-332-8255. Good advice with that. This is Rose, who's on the text line. Good morning, guys. Love the show. I noticed this section of my ash tree, the bark has been pulled back. Maybe there's a bug in there. Overall, the tree seems pretty healthy still, but there we can see that kind of a picture that Rose sent us. There's a spot there where it's pulling back. And if you kind of dig in a little deeper, you know, it's kind of a section in there, but it's kind of pulling away. What do you think, Rick?
I had some Patmore ashes that I lost a bunch of bark of pulling away, and now the whole tree is dying. And so you got to watch for that, because once you got an open spot like that, it's places for the insects to move in. It almost looked like there, like maybe a woodpecker was working on there too, didn't it? Does that look like there? Did you look holes like a woodpecker?
I don't know.
A hole with a little bit of fungal looked like growing in there.
Yeah. Well, I can see a lot of like a brownish color around it, right? So I'd watch, and one thing we got to really be careful about in Saskatchewan, it hasn't been noticed yet, but the emerald ash borer is on its way. And what they do is it's almost like an emerald colored long beetle.
Okay.
It's not even that long. But what they do is they lay their eggs, and the larva stage bores inside the trunk and then eats the side. Now, I haven't basically stops the sap from going up the tree. In Ontario, down in the States, down in even Vancouver area, it's not be bad now. Alberta, Saskatchewan has been relatively free. They had a few plants in Manitoba and Winnipeg, but they are basically in Ontario, millions of trees have been cut down. Down in the States, millions of trees have been cut down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a bad bug because there's no natural predators for it around here. And so watch for that. If you think you have it, you may want to put some traps out. Like there's some traps you can put out, the like sticky traps that catch the bugs. And you can try to see whether you got that in there. But, I mean, you can spray, which is called Dr. Doom. If you have little holes in there, you can kind of spray that pyrethrin around that area.
Okay.
Or into the holes, and that might get the borers if you think you have a borer in there.
Okay. Text from Bob, Barry, Rick, Mike, two Daryls, Greg, Gary, Julie, all coming up your way. So stick around. We'll answer those when we get back. News update time for everybody. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Thanks for spending Sunday morning here with us. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. We've probably got, like, I'd say almost two lightning rounds to go through here. So we're going to fly through some texts and get them answered as best as we can for you. This is Bob, who says, 5 years ago, we had sod replaced in our front yard. On our front yard. It was clay-based sod from Regina.
Yep.
First 2 years did really well. Since then, each year it's kind of thinning out and getting worse and worse with dead spots. Should we peel this off and replace it with a different type, or what is suitable? So there's Dave's lawn from Kipling.
I would say it's not the sod that did it. It's what's underneath the sod that's usually the issue.
Mm, okay.
Okay, so a lot of places you don't have 6 inches of topsoil underneath the sod,
mm-hmm.
right? If you would have that, then you'd have no problem. A lot of it's like 2 or 3 inches.
Right.
Now, with that, could you spread some good topsoil over top of that and just seed?
That's what I'm saying, is top dress. We don't do that as much here. They do that down in the States way more. And so you can just cut your grass low, and then you can top dress with this thin layer of soil, and you do that each year, and then you build up that soil in there, and then also just using the right fertilizers so that you unlock the nutrients, you know, and do a pH test. Find out if your pH of your soil is really high. If it is, you need to use a sulfur-based fertilizer.
Yeah, and just looking at the rest of the lawn here, it's very light-colored green. Yep. You know, it's not very dark.
It's not taking up nutrients.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So just making sure that you know the pH of the soil is huge, and then you know whether you need to use sulfur-based fertilizer or just a regular fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that'll make all the difference. Like, you know, when even in the Saskatoon area, we switched to a local company that makes a fertilizer for the central Saskatchewan area, which is that Groundskeeper. And everybody says, well, why didn't you guys do this a long time ago? You know, it's just amazing what it does. So, and it's way less nitrogen. You're using less nitrogen, but getting better results.
So right? top dress with topsoil, overseed. If you want something that's going to take a few years to get it.
Yep.
Get it full. But if they want it instant, could they tear it out?
Well, if you tear it out, you still got the problem below.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's why you're adding soil. Unless you tear it out, add soil, but you're raising it up, then it's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. So, that's right. Yeah.
So if you can just by top dressing with soil, just putting a thin layer of soil.
And it does look like you got a good start there.
Yep.
Something that the soil's going to hold on to.
I think you'll be fine. Just.
And I think just maybe possibly looks like for Barry, like, or Bob, sorry, just more water, more fertilizer for the whole lawn.
Yep, exactly.
You know, like it needs lots.
And there's two large trees on that lawn too, so they're soaking a lot of nutrients.
They're taking nutrients as well and moisture.
If you want a lawn that survives and just going off of what falls from the sky, you can't really expect much for a lawn.
No.
Right?
Not if you want it to be a manicured one.
No,
nope.
For sure. This is Barry from North Shore Fishing Lake. I've got a large bag of, I might pronounce this wrong, calcinate 15500 greenhouse solution grade that was given to me. What can I use it for?
Cal
You might have to come back.
C-I-N-I-T.
Numbers is a 15500.
That's it.
So it has nitrogen, it has some phosphorus in it.
Yep.
No potassium. I mean,
what could you use that for?
You could use it on just about anything because you're not a high nitrogen.
No, that's right.
Right, you're not a high nitrogen. You could put it on your lawn. You have a little phosphorus, And so you could put it on your lawn, you could put it into your shrub bed, you could do it in, almost anywhere with it, really.
Mm. Okay.
Because it's
leafy vegetables would be fine for that.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, just you can do the vegetables and that kind of stuff. Just don't overdo it in there. But with mm-hmm. that, because with the vegetables, you need more. You need potassium and you need calcium. You need a whole bunch more things. So I wouldn't put it there. I'd use it on your shrubs or otherwise your lawn.
Okay, this is from Rick, who's in Saskatoon. I planted an apple tree years ago and trained it in espalier. So that's the
wires on, then train it down the wires.
Exactly. Last fall, I pruned the heck out of it. I finally got some flowers this year. The new shoots are growing like crazy. There are a few apples this year. Should I prune the shoots now to give the apples more sun?
You can now that the leaves are fully grown and they're bigger, you can do some pruning. They do that in the orchards where you can do some thinning in them if you want. Yes, you could.
Okay. This says, good morning. What do I fertilize my trees and shrubs with? Also, Mugo pines. Donna is in Saskatoon.
Easy one is just 30-10-10.
Okay.
It's a sulfur base or an acid based type of fertilizer. They love it.
We've also got a box elder or Manitoba maple from Sask Power that grew very close to our vinyl fence and now is about 10 feet tall.
Oops.
How do I get rid of the stump once we cut it down?
Well, normally I'd take a stump grinder in there, but that close to the fence is pretty tough. If it's really close to the fence, it's going to be tough to get the stump grinder in there.
Right? Well, they want to kill the tree first before taking it down.
Well, no, the maples. Well, they won't sucker from the roots. They'll sucker from the trunk itself.
Yeah,
but they won't send up shoots from the root. The maples.
I just wasn't sure if maybe killing the tree first would be a good
idea. Just cut it down. You can actually drill some holes in it. And then you can get a product. You have to ask for it. You won't be on the shelves. You can get a stump remover, which you can put into the holes on the trunk, and it basically makes it all punky and makes it rot quicker.
Okay, let's go to our phone lines here while we've got a little bit of time left in the segment. We've got Kevin right now, who's in Saskatoon. Hi there, Kevin. How's it going?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good. What's going on with the onions?
Okay, I've got multiplier onions that I've been buying over the last few years, and it's the same problem. They won't multiply. I get one to two heads, and that's it. And when I let them mature, I pull them up at the bottom. They're really tightly sealed, and they're moist. Now, I've tried watering them. I've tried leaving them dry, and it doesn't seem to make any difference. So I'm not sure if it's a seed or if it's something that I'm not doing right. Years ago, I used to get seed from my mother, and they worked just great. But I don't have access to that anymore.
Yeah. It could be like multiplier onions need proper chilling. So it just means that they might not have been chilled properly and you're having trouble with the actual seed. Overcrowding them can often be a trouble, or too much nitrogen in the soil
can be a problem, and they like a hot spot with lots of sun too.
Yeah.
Right.
So need lots of sun. That's the big thing. And so, with the cloud, we had some pretty hot, warm weather way back in Mother's Day type of thing, but the weather hasn't been that great warm. But you said it's been a couple of years you've been having trouble. Is that right?
Oh, probably the last 4 or 5 years. And I planted from different producers. Like I'm buying the seed, right?
Yes, right.
And it doesn't seem to make any difference. So I was wondering, I don't know, the soil's the same as it used to be. So.
Well, it might be depleted, though, so you might have to add some compost in there. Not a lot of compost, but some compost in there to get some organic material into that soil again. Now, you don't want to overdo it because the ground crops don't like a ton of it, but they do need some of it. And you might have just used up all your micronutrients in your soil.
Yeah, and I would top dress with even a bone meal or something light like that, or just a really well-balanced, even a 10-10-10 or a 14-14-14 fertilizer would be a good idea this year, too.
Yep.
Thanks so much. I'll give that a try.
Yep.
Thanks, Kevin. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye now.
1-877-332-8255. We will get to a couple calls on the break here in just a second. But first, we have this one text we want to get answered. Mike is in Lakeview in Saskatoon. My hollyhocks have been invaded by a shield-shaped black bug with orange markings on its back. Can you identify and advise treatment? So there's a little picture of it zoomed in right there. It's kind of a black bug with a little bit of orange in it. It's got little antlers sticking out.
Just like an ash beetle. So it's very similar to an ash beetle. So what you want to, with that one there, they're easy to take care of.
Okay.
Just hit them with some Bug X out. Or even use some Endol. That'll work fine.
Okay, so spraying Bug X Out or Endol.
Yeah, either one of those will take care of that for you.
Perfect. We're going to get to our lightning round. Terry, Jamie, Julie, Gary, Greg, Sue, and a few more in there that we'll answer when we get back. So stick around. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Welcome back. It's the lightning round here on Garden Talk. We won't take any new texts, but we'll answer all the ones we've got. All right, let's fire into this as soon as we can here. This is from Mike. You did the mics already. Good morning. Regarding our asparagus patch that I talked about last week, we had a text about that. I dug down. The bottoms are virtually non-existent, and that makes sense. There was a small grayish color cutworm type of worm not moving.
Okay.
We noticed now that there are a few small stalks starting to come up. We'll just continue to monitor it. When can you seed more asparagus is the text, I guess, the question.
Well, you can pretty much do that any time, but you're not going to get asparagus from that for a few years, right? So, but you can pretty much do it any time now.
And asparagus, when you seed it, it takes a really long time.
Otherwise, you can buy the plants, too.
We sell second-year roots of asparagus, and it's a little bit more expensive. It's about $4 a root, but you plant them on one-foot centers, and they produce really well. Usually in a couple years, you'll start getting crops out of them.
Okay. Daryl says, I tried something different this year with my tomatoes. Instead of waiting for them to be 2 feet high to put the cages around them and breaking branches off in the process, I put the cages on right after I planted them. Is this going to be okay?
That's what you should do anyways.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I did that with lots of my perennials too.
Yeah. Even peonies, all that kind of stuff. Put your cages on right away in the spring.
Mm-hmm. This is Arlene in Saskatoon. I've got a mock orange shrub that's 4 feet high. They're very dead in the inside with like lots of dead twigs showing.
Yep, yep.
Should I cut it down significantly? And if so, how much? Yep. And
don't
when
do it right
is the best
now,
time?
Right now, mock orange is blooming like crazy. Well, you see them white like crazy.
And
it is.
It's covered in flowers.
Very blue. So what I would do is just treat it like you would right now. Then what you can do is cut that down to about, maybe 2 feet off the ground in the fall after it's dropped all its leaves.
Yep.
And then you'll take a couple of years before it'll get to a nice big size again, but fertilize it every 3 weeks with 30-10-10, and you'll get lots of growth and lots of flowers.
Yeah, it's probably 5 feet tall right now.
Right now, they're just amazing.
The fragrance on them is so beautiful.
The mock orange came through the winter very well this year, and they're blooming like crazy everywhere right now.
But they do get dead wood inside eventually.
They
so you
do.
Have to rejuvenate them once
rejuvenate
in a while.
Rejuvenate them. Yep.
So that's what you're going to do there.
But do it when it's dormant, not now.
There you go. Okay. Daryl says, do you know what this is? Full of grubs. It looks like a cone. So there's a pine tree. I think that's a pine.
Yeah, it's an aphid gall.
It's an aphid gall.
Yeah, it's a gall from an aphid. So what you have to do is you just use some Endol or some Bug X Out or whatever. You can prune that part out. It's a place where they put their spit into the stem of the tree, and it causes a hormone growth, which then they lay their eggs on. Right?
Yeah. He says it's full of grubs.
So it's just it's an insect. So what you want to do is you get rid of the adult insects. You can cut that piece, that little stem off if you see them. Throw it away. Don't put it in the compost. And then you can spray with Bug X Out to control them.
But bottom line with galls, as long as you keep the tree healthy, they're not going to harm it.
It's not going to harm it. It's if it gets a whole big bunch of it, if it's just one or two, I wouldn't even just cut it off, throw it away, don't do anything.
Perfect. Majory is in bigger. I have got two peonies, one red, one pink, in a south-facing flower bed against the house. Get sun and shade throughout the day. They've not bloomed in 4 years since they were transplanted. What can you suggest to help them bloom?
Well, it takes a couple of years after your transplant to get them, especially if you cut them into small eyes, but it's been 4 years, she said.
Yeah.
So they should be blooming by now. So I would suggest using an organic type fertilizer. They don't like a 20-20-20 or something that's too much, then they won't do very well.
I'm also wondering if they were planted too deep.
That's a good point.
That will cause them not to bloom. So if you planted them too deep, there's eyes on those peonies. You need those eyes to just be like maybe an inch or two under the soil, maybe even just an inch. And then you might want to even dig it up and bring it a little bit shallower if you think that might be the case.
But not right now, though.
No, it's dormant.
When it's dormant. Okay.
And the other thing is too much nitrogen again for peonies. Yeah, they don't like nitrogen.
But you're right. If they just transplanted them, maybe they planted them too deep.
Darlene says, I got a cabin at Candle Lake. I have a wild rose bush growing beautifully where I don't want it. What time of year can it be moved? What needs to be done when we move it?
Okay, spruce trees, basically you can move them.
A spruce? It's a rose.
Oh, sorry, you said rose. Oh, what did I say? Spruce?
It's a wild rose.
I was still stuck on the last one. A wild rose. Wild rose you can move when they're dormant. If you want to move it, that's the best way to move it is in the fall or early spring.
Okay.
Like in the fall once they lose their leaves. or otherwise in spring, in basically the 15th of April.
And take as much dirt as you can with it, right?
Yeah, they're pretty good. If they're smaller, they can even go bare root if you get them when they're dormant. It's not a problem.
Okay, okay. So just wait till that time.
Yep.
Dig up as
with... You move it now, it won't survive.
No, no. And then find a find a good place for it there again. This is Barb in Regina. Good morning, Rick, Jay, and Jill. Great Sunday morning listening as usual. Thanks, Barb. Is alfalfa fertilizer suitable for lilacs and Japanese barberries, or is there something more appropriate?
If you want tons of growth, you'll need a higher nitrogen. Okay, that's right. The only thing. Otherwise, it's good for any plants, alfalfa pellets. Honestly, it is. But if you want tons of growth, then you need a higher nitrogen. So like a 20-20-20, a 30-10-10, or something like that. And you could also use the same time the alfalfa pellets to give it all its other nutrients to make it healthy. Okay?
Okay, perfect. Let's see. This is from Greg, who's in Regina. We'll keep rolling through here. I fertilized the lawn with 29-14-0 nutrient fertilizer, and the city just fertilized their grass in the park beside us on Friday. We got some good rains in Regina yesterday, but this morning still noticed there are still undissolved blue granules in the lawn and in the park, but the white and gray stuff has totally dissolved.
Yep.
What are the blue ones? Are they like a slow release, or?
It's a slow release. They're polymer covered fertilizer. So that's the slow release part of the fertilizer. It's going to release slowly over time, whereas the other ones released quickly. And to get your green right away, and the other ones keep it green longer over the season.
So he says, is there a chance they'll burn the grass if they're not totally dissolved before the sun comes out?
Nope, they're fine. They're made so that they release slowly, and the fertilizers have blends like that.
Good question, Greg. Thanks for all kind of learning something with that, which is good. Gary is in Govan. 6 years ago, we removed a Russian olive from an area. This year, we have these shoots coming up in the flower garden into the lawn. Is it that plant coming back, and how do we get rid of it?
Yeah, just you'll need to basically what you have to do is you have to use the whether you use Top Gun or Advance or Roundup or whatever you want to do, or dig them up, because you're going to have the roots will come up. Right now they're not even recommending planting Russian olives anymore because they're evasive.
Right. So
okay, but they're a great dryland plant, but they are evasive.
Right.
The birds will spread the seed everywhere.
Julie says on the text line, groundkeeper didn't catch what setting on the Scott spreader. I used 2.5 and covered twice for an equivalent setting of 5.
Yeah, that's
lawn,
good.
Lawn isn't as green as it should be, and some areas are still kind of brown, thinking I didn't put enough. Julie, my Scott spreader that I drop, it's a drop spreader, not the spray or the...
Yeah, not the rotary.
The rotary one. Yep. My drop spreader, it's on at like 7.
7.
That's what I use
and
with groundkeeper.
And you do both ways?
I know both ways. Okay. And she's as green as carpet.
It's pretty tough to, with groundskeeper to burn your lawn. Honestly, it is.
Yep. It doesn't ever burn. Yep. I've never had it burn with that. So you can go up probably, Julie, you can go up to 4 or 5, or if you want to be really bold like me, go to 7. So that's your choice. But probably 2.5 is getting to be pretty light with that. This is Dawn from Aberdeen area. We dug spruce trees from a ditch in a field and replanted them in our shelter belt.
Yep.
The tips of some of these trees have turned brown since planting. Is there anything we should do about this?
Did it say when they planted them?
It doesn't say when.
Okay. If they planted them last fall, then the tips are probably sticking out the snow and they just desiccated a bit. They should have sent out new buds right now. If they did it this spring, they probably just took a little damage and they'll come out of that and just keep going. Just
fertilizing water,
right? Yep.
Okay.
Keep it moist.
We got a couple texts we didn't get on the air, so we'll get those answered really quick off the air and text you back. But otherwise, that pretty much wraps us up today. Wow. Flew by
again.
Happy
Sunday.
Happy Sunday. Yes. Enjoy the week ahead.
If you had moisture, thank you. It's awesome. Perfect. It's great to see the farmers are going to be big smiles on their faces.
All right. We'll be live again next weekend. Thanks again. Talk to you then. I'm Jay with Jill and Rick. You've been listening to Garden Talk on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.